Clark is up and about here at the moment, playing as a deep forward. He's got this from 45 to 50, and he clobbers it. He's got a couple. That is on target. That is pure magnificence. Bailey kicks it.
Look at the runner, McKenna. Just outside 50. That's superb. Beautiful transition from Brisbane.
Took the risk. Didn't find Ashcroft. Bowie just went bang on the rebound.
And out the back is the big man. Big O picks it up and gets it right. Ashcroft. Flying shot is there.
Ripped away here by Fletcher. A bounce inside 50. Closing at the punt road end.
Good spot here for Danaher as a late one coming here for Brisbane. Dangerous long ball. Bailey's got it.
Whoa, Woden, right on the boundary line. He won't, will he? Yes, he will. What about Whoa, Woden for his first goal in football?
The heat's brilliant from Brisbane. Bailey steps around. There we are.
The round 18 game against the D's at the MCG finds a new way to disappoint Lions fans all over the country with a heartbreaking loss by a point with 30 seconds left to go in the game after what was 2.5 quarters of some of our better footy. The D's blew the game open real quick, and then Charlie went down clutching his knee, and it was then we all thought, uh-oh, here we go, before we turned it on and clawed our way back into a 5-goal lead. Enter the Melbourne leaders, and you all know what happened after that. Patrick, thankfully you didn't make it to the game.
Yeah, well, it's... I mean, I don't want to be blamed, but one of those ones, I think, coming back from Brisbane, it was sort of akin to change of seasons, kind of cold, and I didn't think feeling not too bloody good, sitting in the wind in like 9 degrees would have done me any sort of favors. So probably happy that I didn't, but also yeah, not a lot to really think about there.
Yeah, where do we start with this one? Let's start with the ins and outs, because that's always a fun place to start. Link comes in, as does Jared Berry, after his week off. Out goes Dev, who makes his way to the sub, and Jimmy Madden gets dropped, as we all expected. Dunk's still another week away, and God, we can't get him back in the team quick enough.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting last week. I kind of, when I was listening back, I was like, Dev Rob's going to come out for sure. I think we were just kind of operating on the last in, first out kind of ethos. And not to say that it kind of worked for balance. Like, I don't know, for me, I would have just put Berry in the middle and taken JL out. JL, albeit, had a good kind of half of the game, but seemed to struggle in the last quarter. I suppose quite a lot of them did. But
I was going to say, you could paint a lot of the team with that same brush.
So I guess, yeah, Dev Rob on the bench and young players... More than enough talent going on that list, but yeah, as you said, we kind of got sucker punched at the start. I think definitely that the end that we kicked in the first and third quarter was the harder end to kick goals at, particularly early on in the game, because that one by McCluggage, it just seemed to get like punted out of the air.
Yeah, strange,
whilst
wasn't it?
It was heading dead straight, it was kind of like, did that get touched? What the hell happened? I don't know. So. Definitely some funky stuff happened, and I'll, you know, that did also happen in the last quarter when Petrarca kind of, you know, leveled one offline by a while. But yeah, it was interesting. It kind of almost as bad as it was for the first sort of 20-odd minutes, and then things changed. And I think there are elements of this game that really show how capable things are, but also elements that show why it just feels like it's not going to happen in a larger scheme of, in a grand scheme of winning a premiership, because that kind of Jekyll and Hyde nature of the game was, you know, initially remedied. And then it wasn't as if Simon Goodwin kind of changed things around in the last quarter. They just kind of kept at it. And as you sort of mentioned, and I'm sure will be mentioned, the Melbourne leaders kind of just decided to really lift their team. So, how do you want to go about this? Because like there was, unfortunately, really similar to the Richmond game last year. There are so many like positives, but like the negatives just completely outweigh any sentiment that comes from these sorts of things.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Like that first, I mean, let's start with that first 20 minutes where Melbourne just got off to a real hot start and put four goals on the board before we even knew it. You know, we're coming off two reasonably big wins against lowly opposition over the last couple of weeks at home, and then we come into the MCG, get a bit spooked, but we managed to correct it and then put together some of our best footy, like those handball chains going through the ground that we don't see often enough, but when we do, it's bloody scintillating to watch on a ground that everyone has written us off at, and, you know, we all know why, and this result obviously isn't going to help that narrative, but, you know, as much as Fagan and all the players just want to dismiss it and push it aside, like, I think there might be a little bit of touch of arrogance about that whole thing. It might be easier just to go, you know what, let's talk about the MCG, why can't we win, and have like a round table discussion with it in amongst the coaches and playing group. But to just say, nah, it's not an issue, stop talking to me about the MCG, it's like, well, stop losing on the MCG.
I agree, because I said just before we started, like, it was something that's entirely a statistical anomaly in terms of the games we've played, who we've played, when we've played, how many games we get there, because I think we've got the fewest games, except for maybe GWS and some other like shit kicker team. But it's now a thing because we keep losing, and we find, like, you know, oh yeah, there was the elimination final last year, but there was an element of a complete collapse from Melbourne in that game. But like, we are finding better and newer and more like embarrassing ways to lose these games. Like, I didn't think it could get any worse than that Richmond game last year. And then the Hawthorn game happened, which is one where we just didn't show up. And then this one where it's like, it's embarrassing. Like, there's no other word for it. Like, I don't know what in terms of the club are sort of thinking if they're ignoring this as an issue, because like, I don't know what my zinger is there.
It really is strange, and the remaining games that we may get to play on the MCG are games that are really going to bloody matter, because we're going to come up against, you know, potentially a Collingwood in a qualifying semi-elimination, whatever final, maybe even a prelim. So you've got one chance to try and figure it out, and, you know, we managed to do that last year, but stakes are high. And it's not like they shouldn't have expected this, because the last time we played Melbourne, what happened in the last 12 minutes of that game? They bloody came hard and they came at us, and we tried to shut down shop and they almost got away with a win. This time we didn't have the luxury of a 40-point buffer. Went too defensive way too early, put Gunston behind the ball with like 7 minutes, 8 minutes on the clock.
Well, you know, the irony of that is the fact that we had a 40-point buffer and this time we had a 28-point buffer and we only won by 12 points last time.
Yep.
So they kicked the same amount. You know, lots going to be... like, a lot of people are going to point at, like, Gunston going behind the ball. That's not the problem. The problem's not bringing one of the half-forwards into the contest. Because to just be outnumbered at a contest and expect to win the ball either in the air or at ground level. We're the worst team in the competition for, like, defensive 50 ground ball. So, like, the idea that we're saying, well, we'll chunk it up and get the ground balls against probably, I don't know, I don't care to look, one of the better teams that ground ball gets in the forward half. Like, what are they thinking? Like, what? Win at the contest, and if you want to, like, you know, if you're not bringing someone in the contest to equalize the numbers so you can have one behind the ball because you want to, like, create a threat, then play, don't bring one behind it at all. Like, it's so rudimentary and so simple. And it's like, it baffles the mind. And particularly when, like, it was just a momentum thing. It wasn't even a tactical difference from Melbourne. That the entire game plan changed and then changed back. And, you know, probably while we were playing slow, what was it? It's like they kicked 8-1.
Yep.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
I guess most Lions fans are feeling a pretty similar way this weekend, and it's just been horrible. And we spoke about it last week that, you know, the result of this game was going to speak volumes either way. You know, we walk away with a lose, it raises all the questions that keep popping up. it brings up all the same doubts about us as a legitimate footy team that's going to contend. On the flip side, if we had walked away with a win, it's bloody party time, and the belief, not just in the fans, but surely in the players and the coaching staff, the whole board would be right up there. But instead, we've squandered a golden opportunity again. Another primetime game, another top four team, and we've just failed the test again. And it was lost in the middle in the first 20 minutes. We could not buy ourselves a clearance, and the same thing happened in the last quarter. Now, is it the players or is it the coaching, like the coaching directive to go ultra defensive in the last quarter, or is it the players not being able to execute properly or just not showing enough composure? Or, you know, those are the questions, I suppose, and I'm sure that's what they're going to be looking at all week before we come up against Geelong, who are in red hot form. Yay, lucky us.
Yeah, let's not think about that. But all I can say is that the personnel has changed over, you know, the last 5 years. So since we've been playing at the pointy end of the competition, and we've been losing in the same way. So like the, you know, the players have changed, albeit not all of them, but some of them have, some have grown into it. But like, it's got to be something going on, because like, Gawn was best on ground for sure.
Yes.
But he wasn't best on ground in the middle two quarters. Oe was playing him absolutely to perfection and even hit the scoreboard and was like, you know, was going toe to toe with him. And I don't think that's an element of like him running out of steam, because all he was doing, every boundary throw in, he was just on his back shoulder so he couldn't tap the ball behind and open up the ground. And it was like, beautiful. You're playing a defensive ruck role on probably the most influential ruck, who really had to make a statement given what happened with Grundy going in. And it was perfect. Everything worked. And there were some great passages of play. Like Fletcher's goal was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like it defied any sort of actual like logic, reason, physics, name it. Ashcroft's goal was amazing. Zach Bailey was really good in the middle part of the game. But there's just things. Like Gunson was good, great in front of goal. Not greatest spare man.
No. And like he, when things were dire in that first quarter and a half, it wasn't until sort of just before halftime where we eventually got ourselves a lead. You know, I was thinking to myself, you know, welcome back Jack Gunster. He looks, you know, 10 times slower than he did last week. You know, all the talk coming out of him was he was running on top of the ground and the work he'd put into his legs, and he was able to run and all that sort of stuff. But he looked, you know, slow as a wet week. But he warmed into the game and was able to affect the scoreboard in a pretty meaningful way. I thought Danaher's game was like one of his best games.
He was good, but I you know, like it's sort of a Joey Danaher game where there's goals missed, there's weird decisions. I think he got bullied in the ruck by Van Rooyen, which is not a great indictment on him as a ruck. Not I disagree, but in that I think it was one of his better games. He got a lot of the ball, but yeah. Again, it sort of strikes as that kind of fair weather footy type thing.
Yeah.
When everything was going great, all good. But, you know, we've seen him crop up in the back half and make intercepts and stuff. Like, you know, where was that? There was no outlet. There was none of that. So, you know, I thought Hipwood for parts of the game was good on May. For other parts of games was not good.
Yeah, that shot from the boundary line was pretty nice.
Well, it should have bloody won the game. It should have set the tone for the last quarter, but for whatever reason, things just... I can't put my finger on it, whether it's a running out of legs, whether it's this, that, or the other, but what can you do? I thought Harris and Jack Payne were good at times and not good at times, but basically everybody. There was no sort of consistent performer over the course of the game.
Yeah,
even, and no one stood up when they needed to.
Yeah, even Lucky, who in those games we've typically relied on to be the sort of the lone warrior, really quiet first half. Obviously knew that because he came out in the third quarter and started to get involved pretty heavily straight away and got the first couple of clearances and, you know, worked himself into the game by sheer just willpower. I think we just really, really missed Josh Dunkley in that game.
Yeah, there's an element of that. I was sort of explaining kind of the idea of like the Petrarca role in a pretty rudimentary sense of just like, you know, big-bodied midfielder. A lot of midfielders can play center and then they can go forward of center and impact, but there aren't too many that can do it the other way around, that can go back. And Dunkley's one of the probably, like, can you think of anyone else? Like, I can't be bothered to, but I can pretty confidently say not too many people have that impact. So it was, you know, Stasevich did as good a job as he kind of could have done, and I think he got hung out to dry early on in the game. but he was also really good in the middle part of the game when he got a lot of help, and he didn't give away free kicks and stuff like that, which he could have. So
he gave away one towards the end to track on a stoppage.
Yeah, which I thought was bullshit, but that's all right.
Knowing Brandon Stašević, he will be absolutely filthy because he was sort of working between Petrarca and Cozzi, and Trak ended up with four and Cozzi ended up with, what, two or three. So, you know, Stašević will be absolutely filthy with the way he had a Friday night, but he won't be alone. Like, Cam Rayner was pretty quiet throughout the night. You know, Jared Berry ended up getting subbed, but, you know, as you were saying off air before, he did a good job on Langdon, who was not influential in the game to the same extent that some of their others were.
Yeah, it's very difficult to pick the bones out of this. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm a logical thinker, and the way that this game happened just didn't make a lick of sense in terms of decisions made or why they were made. And unfortunately, it's the sort of thing that, like, you get asked or you ask a question and you don't really get a particularly straight answer. You sort of just get like a, oh, we thought this would be the right way to do something or whatever.
If you go into a game against Collingwood with that lead of anywhere between 24 and 28 points is where it sort of hovered for a good portion of it. Is Fagan making the same decisions? Because we know, like, the competition is acutely aware of the fact that Collingwood brings back those leads week in, week out. So is Fagan pulling those same levers that he did against Melbourne, against Collingwood? Like, is he making those same decisions knowing that Collingwood will come and come hard? But having said that, like, we saw it in round two that Melbourne came and came hard in the last quarter as well. So it's just, once again, whether it was the coaching directive or just not being able to execute.
Well, it doesn't suit our game. Our game is a forward half turnover game. And if we're playing the game in the back half, the only team that's good at back half play is Collingwood. Like, that's a very kind of like lower down the rungs style of play. A lot of the teams that are pretty good are forward half teams. And by kind of relinquishing territory and like relinquishing the ball, we're like actively playing against our strengths.
And playing right into Melbourne's.
Yeah. Because, you know, they're a confidence team too. And like in the last quarter when Hitwood kicked that goal and you had like more on May and more on Lever and like Petty, like the camera was on Petty, like it was on friggin' Gorn in round two. And it's like, these guys were ripe for an absolute implosion. And you just stopped. Like, you just stopped.
Well, the frustration is there for everyone. It's palpable, the frustration. And, you know, you as Lions fans listening right now are feeling it too. Your mates that are Lions fans, that they'll be feeling it as well. But there was a lot of good stuff in that, you know, two and a half quarters. Like that ball movement, you know, Connor McKenna had a great game and he was instrumental to a lot of our scoring chains. And, you know, when we were moving the ball, we were doing everything possible that you should do against Melbourne. And that is, don't kick it to Stephen May, don't kick it to Jake Lever, work the ball around them and get yourself shots on goal that way. And, you know, we saw it a few times during that sort of second and third quarter. We'd switch the ball, switch it back, maybe even switch it a fourth time, but like patiently wait till we could move the ball and it would more or less end up in a goal each and every time. Like Ashcroft's fantastic goal came from one of those. But then the last quarter came and, you know, it Darcy Wilmot just bombing it down the line time and time again to, guess who, M. Gorn. And you're like, what are you doing? Did you not learn anything from the middle part of the game where, you know, what was working and we were building a 5-goal lead and now we're going back to just bombing it down the line, which is Melbourne's bread and butter?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, I think Ashcroft's goal against whoever the hell it was goal of the year by a mile. But two of my favourite goals of this year were scored by us in this game. You know, the one you mentioned where we switched the ball, it wasn't on, we switched it back. And then I think it was like Zach Bailey might have got it on sort of the left defensive flank. And he kind of had a bit of an ambitious switch where he cut two players out and went straight to someone. And then they went up and that's where Ashcroft scored. But it's like, that was such positive reinforcement and reward for effort and reward for the right decisions that it's just like, how do you forget that so easily? Like, that was perfect. And I was so happy at the time that like that resulted in a goal, because I'm like, oh, they've learned, like they've turned the corner. And then they did a U-turn and turned back around the corner and like drove down a subway staircase or something. I don't know.
Yeah, drove down a dark alleyway to where Max Gorn and Christian Petracca were waiting with a, you know, a tire iron.
Yeah. So those two, they obviously made all the difference. Melksham probably deserves a mention too. When Melksham kind of shinned one out of bounds on the full early on in the game, I said sort of, he's got a pretty annoying face, but also he did punch Stephen May, so he can't be all that bad. I'd like to publicly retract that statement and say he is that bad. So Gorn and Petrarca. Petrarca ends with, what, four goals. Yeah. He kicked, what was it, two or three in the first quarter?
Three in the first, I think.
Yeah, and then one toward the end. Probably more influential around the ball and just sort of picked up the team and went with it. Gorn, similarly. I mean, he basically took Darcy Wilmot's kicking style and just took it to the nth degree with that roost from outside 50.
Did he want?
Where, you know, fair enough, we've been saying Darcy Wilmot kicks the ball high because you have to pan up at the Gabba, but panning up at the MCG is a completely different thing. I think, you know, the Lions in terms of list and personnel aren't lacking a lot, but I tend to think they are lacking an experienced player who's willing to like just take the responsibility. And I know that a lot of the time Neil does that, but I don't think that's his personality. He's kind of lacks the sort of level of aggression to be able to do that. And there are players that it could be, but they're not. You know, Cam Rayner's one where he was pretty anonymous.
Yeah.
Even when we were playing well, I don't know if he was doing a job, but it's sort of someone to sort of just bring it with you. Like Harris Andrews is nearly there, but he probably wasn't given a very good account, particularly towards the end where just the marks weren't being taken, the read, him and Payne kind of struggled. But like, you know, where was his sort of Shannon Hearn moment of just because Harris is also one of our best ball users out of the back half, and a lot of people get nervous when he has the ball, but he's an unbelievable kick of the ball. There was no stability. No one willing to just sort of say, let's just slow the pace down. And yeah, fair enough, we didn't get our hands on the ball. But that's probably more indicative of people maybe hiding when things got a bit difficult. It was interesting to see that a lot of really team-lifting moments have been coming from younger players. You know, the Fletcher goal, the Ashcroft goal, they were big moments in the game. Whereas the Melbourne big moments were the Gorn one, where the Petrarca, Cozzy Pickett as well. Like
Viney. Snap at the end.
Yeah,
as well.
that Viney goal, yeah. Big players cropping up at big times to really shift the momentum of the game. And it's just like, is that Dunkley? Probably, maybe. I don't know. But does he have the team in the same way? Probably not yet.
No.
So I guess maybe they're trying. Like maybe they're saying, oh, in a year or in a year or two, you know, Dunkley will have the dressing room and be able to do that. And Harris will be just that little bit more experienced. But far out, it's frustrating when again and again the good players, you know, whether it was like Dustin Martin back in the day or whether it's Dangerfield, or they get a hold of us. And
yeah, Paddy Cripps has done it as well. Yeah.
Yeah, Cripps. So I don't know. That seems to be the only thing that we're lacking in terms of someone who has the just innate game sense and ability and leadership value, you know? Like we were blessed probably unrealistically with having whom I described as the best captain in AFL history in Michael Voss. If Michael Voss is playing, we're not losing that game. If he's coaching, maybe. But if he's playing, we're not losing that game.
Yeah, even if we still had Luke Hodge on the list, he would have been that sort of bloke, especially in the back half, that definitely would have sensed the footy occasion and made the most of it. At times that has been Lachie Neale. You know, that final against Richmond last year where he didn't leave the ground for the second half and just absolutely tore it apart. It was a real, like, you know, follow me boys type performance. But we just didn't have that on Friday.
Yeah, and also, you know, no Fridge, no Oliver. Makes you wonder.
Yeah.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear holes.
Do we want to bother doing votes?
I mean, we should. Gorn, Petrarca, Danaher for me.
Yeah. Just go corn for truck and Melksham, so.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, it is worth mentioning Melksham. He obviously got the, you know, the defensive role on Harris Andrews, who's had a great 6 weeks of footy, Harris Andrews. But Melksham obviously had that matchup. And, you know, he had a great first half. He butchered the ball, as you said. He sort of just, like, moosed that one out on the full, and then he dropped a chest mark, and then he shinned another one, and it looked like, you know, he's doing all the right things, but his ball use was poo, and then he sort of figured out how to kick a ball in the last quarter, and we all know what happened after that. A lot of father-sons in that game as well. I think there was five amongst the two teams, so I don't know if that's just a little novel thing that I noticed.
Every time I see, like, Woe Woden's name, it just makes me think of, like, him winning the Brownlow Medal and his girlfriend singing the Demons song up on Brownlow Medal night, and them getting absolutely towelled by Essendon a week later or on the weekend, so... He's up there with worst Brownlow medalists, I think we've mentioned before.
Yeah.
Him and...
Cooney and Prittis.
That guy from Cooney, yeah. But yeah, Woe Woden, far out, man.
Taj Woe Woden's first goal was a pretty nice one as well. It was very eerily similar to Ashcroft's or Fletcher's. So, you know, something nice for them, I suppose. All right, that's enough for that. We did have... a fair amount of questions. With losses do come questions.
Oh, goody. Questions. This is going to be fun, isn't it?
Is it what? I'm going to lump a couple of these together because they are fairly similar. Byron Jepson on Twitter says, how do you lose that? Iago says, why does the universe hate us? Delvis, also on Twitter, how the hell do we lose this game? And the answer to those questions is, as we've discussed over the first half an hour or so, is...
You basically throw the game.
Yeah, we wish we had a reason, but it defies all logic.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add, so pass. That's all I can muster at this juncture. So
okay, Anna with an interesting question: was Joe Danaher the reason we nearly won, or the reason that we lost?
Both.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a question. Like, I was kind of in a bit of a rage cloud. Well, not rage cloud. It's like, it's just. You know, it's just a game at the end of the day, but, you know, it feels a bit, as the footy show used to say, more than a game. What was the situation with that Hipwood mark at the end?
I mean, I think you can tell at the end that the umpire is actually calling for a free kick to Lever because Hipwood sort of had an arm around the neck. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Neither here nor there, just the thought it was interesting. And
I didn't think Hipwood had it. I thought, I mean... By the end of it, when it was all said and done, Lever had the ball in his hands and Hipwood had an arm around him. If anything, it was going to be one of those can't tell, let's ball it up, boys, type of operation. So,
twice in a lifetime.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so is Danaher the reason we won or lost? Or whatever the hell it was, I don't know. Yes.
Like, I thought he had a really good game. You know, he was involved in a lot of the plays in the middle of the ground, you know. You know, kicked some clutch-ish goals. Obviously, he had that one that bounced at right angles that goes through 99 times out of 100. He tried his best to set up Gunston, I think, with that little chip over the top. I think Gunston just didn't.
Yeah, what the hell was that? Yeah, right.
I think he was trying to be selfless, which I quite liked, because... You know, you would normally see Joe sort of just take that and butcher it.
Well, I mean, he's tried to be selfish, you know, there and a couple of weeks ago, and it ended up with bloody Archie getting concussed.
Yeah.
In one of the dumbest, like, kind of Stooges-style passages of play back then. So, I don't know, like, yeah, I'm all for selflessness, but, like, within reason. If you're a left-footed player running in at goal... 35 metres out on your preferred foot, just put the ball through.
We would have at least got a draw.
Oh, well, I mean, it's no point in talking about. Who are you, Damien Barrett, with your sliding doors moment, you twat? Like, oh, yeah, if the bounce had gone the other way, it's like, yeah, true, but if we'd not stopped playing, we would have won by 6 goals.
Yeah. A couple of Fagan-related questions. Leroy, has Fagan been sacked yet? Not to my knowledge at this point. Jono on Instagram, thoughts on Fagan, not saying he should be sacked, but his decision to go defensive was terrible. This is not the first, second, or third time he's made a terrible coaching decision in a big game, and you have to ask the question.
Yeah, well, I think reading between the lines when I sort of said we've lost in this similar style, albeit probably not as horrendous, with different personnel over the past 5 years, you kind of, it really only points to one thing. We talked, what was it, last week? Maybe the week before, I can't remember. My head is not what it used to be. We talked about the assistant coaches. Ah, no, it was last week because we were talking about coaching from the bench or coaching from whatever the hell, the box. And we said we weren't too sure about, like, we didn't know our assistant coaches too well and that sort of thing. Like, I'd probably argue we've got some pretty weak assistant coaches. And the evidence of that is the fact that, like, we keep making bad decisions. But at the same time, it's like, is Fagan just sort of blindly going with those decisions, or is he making the decisions? Like, we've heard a bit about Fly and how he sort of is there more as a mouthpiece rather than like a tactical kind of guy. What is the structure with what's going on here? Because I know that they swapped the defense and the forwards coach, but like, it's the same thing. Like, it's the same stoppingness of game style. And if there's going to be criticism leveled at the assistant coaches, it has to be leveled at the coach.
Honestly, it is a tough one. And you have to hope that whatever happens throughout the week and lead up to this game against Geelong, that they do have a good hard review of this game. And, you know, you'd like to say you don't make the same mistake again, but it has happened before.
Yeah, how many times have we been saying this?
Yeah.
I saw someone put up a really interesting kind of side-by-side regarding the Richmond game last year at the MCG in here, where I think we kicked 1.5 in the last quarter there and we kicked 1.4 in this one. We needed to kick one more goal in that game. And I know it sounds dumb being like, you know, oh, we lost by a point, so we need to kick a goal. But you're sitting there and there was a point, I think, where we were 19 points ahead. And I was like, well, they have to score 5 times. And I think they scored 8 times.
Yeah.
And it was like, what the hell is going on? Like, the kind of important point completely gone. New ways to open old wounds, I guess. That can be the name of this podcast. Just like last week should have been Melbourne preview, because no one gives a shit about West Coast, so.
No. All right, some questions along a similar vein here as well. Brad on Twitter, why on earth do we ever go into defensive mode when we play our attacking brand? Teams simply cannot handle it. Our best is, and this is from Roy Boys, who I'm not sure if this was a good or a bad thing. He sent through the AFL expected score stats, which had us winning by 2 goals. So thanks. But he also chimed in with, our best is clearly good enough, even on the G and against the best in the comp. But do you happen to have a better defend the lead plan that you could email over to Fags? Personally, I'd like it to say something like, we're winning, so let's just keep doing that.
Yeah.
Pretty succinct and hard to disagree with.
Well, I mean, we covered it before. You know, where I think it's Port Adelaide and us are the two top forward 50 intercept scoring teams. We might, I think, have the highest score from intercepts in the competition.
Yes.
But it's a forward half game, you know, for what we do. So why we're playing out of our comfort zone, I said we're the lowest ranked team for defensive 50 ground balls. I'll say it again. Our team, our structure, our style does not suit, you know, not having the ball. The reason why the game against St Kilda and against Carlton and against Richmond was so comprehensive was because we had the ball. We controlled the ball. Like, we had the ball. We were the aggressor. And it was like, we were resetting whenever things weren't on, and it was, it's just so obvious. so I'm saying the same things again and again because the questions are the same.
Yeah, I get it.
So ask me a different question, you Burke.
Okay, well, here's another one from the political loser, also on Twitter. Do you think top two is still likely after Port's loss to Carlton? I think we can still make top two if we win the rest of our games this season. I can see the Pies losing to Port and to us and to Essendon. Port could also lose to the Crows and the Cats. I think a lot has to go right for all of that to happen. I think top two is officially out of reach for us now.
No, I think it's more likely we will finish outside the four than we'll finish top two.
Yeah, potentially. Because
I know we've sat here before and we sat here after the whatever game, Western Bulldogs or whatever, going like, oh, we're going to be like 0-5. And we kind of weren't, but whatever. But I can see us losing to Fremantle at Optus. I can see us losing to Geelong. I can see us losing to Collingwood. And I can see us losing to St Kilda. I mean, St Kilda is shite anyway, but like, no, maybe the wheels have fallen off, haven't they?
Hey, he's finally admitted it.
Yeah, it would be all well and good to win all of our games, because what do we got? We got six more games.
Yep.
We had a 28-point lead with a quarter to go, and we didn't win that. So my faith in their ability to do anything is gone. Like, it's gone.
Fair enough. And this is where what I was speaking about last week, is the result either way was going to speak volumes. And once again, it's easy to overreact to a loss like that. There was still plenty of good stuff in there, and hopefully that we can latch onto that, because we are going to bloody need it against the Cats, who did an absolute number on Essendon yesterday.
Funnily enough, you know, the Lions find ways to just ruin my footy watching weekend, because I don't want to go anywhere near the sport. I think the only thing I did was, like, on the way to Bunnings today, listen to a bit of North Melbourne and Hawthorn, but it was just halftime. So they were like, yeah, Wardlaw's gigantic and Sheezel's got 20 touches. And I'm like, cool. I'm going to get a Bunnings sausage, hey?
Well, those are the questions that we've got through so far. Feel free to get involved in any way, shape or form. Twitter, Instagram, also on Threads now. I don't, you know.
Tell us Threads.
Yeah, it's a new one.
Okay.
I'm getting my head around that, but we do have a profile on there. Join the Discord, send through an email, blfancast@gmail.com.
Make sure you follow us on socials. Just search for BL Fancast.
Changes you're making, mine's going to be pretty easy. Dunkley and Lyons out.
I haven't even thought about this because, like, quite frankly, like, yeah, that change is a good change. And, yeah, probably sitting on that. Don't know. Don't care.
I mean, there may be room to move. I know a lot of people are sort of a bit iffy on Berry and might prefer Dev in that sort of role, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Dev's not a winger, so...
Yeah.
I mean, Jarrod Berry's not really a winger either, but Jarrod Berry cops a lot of flack, and I think it's a pretty... He's had a pretty good season, so I don't buy into criticism of him, particularly when he was off the field when we capitulated.
Dev did all right, though, once he came on, to be fair. I thought he had a pretty...
Yeah, put himself out there, but, I mean, that's not... Yeah. You know, I don't treat it as, like, because Dev did that, Berry, you know, because for all intents and purposes, like, Dev hadn't been running around, so I found it unbelievable they didn't take JL off, because JL waned pretty heavily in the last quarter, so he was pretty handy.
Kicked a goal. Kicked a very Jarrod Lyons goal.
And he was pretty handy throughout the game. Kept things ticking reasonably well, but the pace of the game and the intensity of the game got too much for him in the last quarter, which has happened virtually every big game we've played with him in the team. That's my biggest criticism of him over the past sort of 4 years, that when like there have been big games, he's never stood up.
Yeah,
get him as far from the team as possible.
I think you'll get your wish, because if Dunkley's right, that is Jarrod Lyons' ticket back to the Twos, who had the bye this week, so nothing to report there. But we do come up against the Cats at the Gabba. Thankfully, it's at the Gabba. That is the one thing working in our favour at the moment. But they are hitting form at the right time. They found themselves up to fifth on the ladder, just like that. And they are, as Chris Scott wheeled out the Breaking Bad quote last week, that they are the danger.
Yeah. They're knocking on the door of the top four at this point in time.
They certainly are. 4:30 game. We're going to have to pull our fingers fair out if we want to get the win here. Jeremy Cameron looked a little bit bruised. He copped a few hits yesterday, as did Gary Rowan. So I was
good. They both deserve it.
I was hoping that they would be a little bit more long-lasting than they inevitably ended up being. But, yeah, it was a training drill for them against the Bombers.
Which is pretty funny that they were really good last week and really shite this week.
Dunkley hopefully comes in. Lyons takes a seat. What is it that you want to see in this game against the Cats?
Well, if Dunkley doesn't get up, I want to see Lyons out anyway and Berry to play in the middle and Dev Rob to be there or thereabouts or something akin to that sort of...
Yep.
Madness. What do I want to see? I don't know. Just win the game and don't play defensive. Okay, I'll tell you what I don't want to see. I don't want to see a man behind the ball. If I can not see that throughout the whole game, then that'll be fine.
Sure. I think it's a pretty fair request, given what's transpired over the last 3 days.
I mean that by design. You know, it's fine if OE drops off and, you know, plays a little bit of behind the ballishness. But, yeah, no dropping a spare behind and leaving the contest as a 5-on-6. That's all. That's all I want to see. Not that. And I want to see us handball the ball and kick the ball and switch the ball and, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, I want to see Zach Tui torp the ball half the field like Ben Graham used to do back in the day.
Speaking of torps, actually, there was, I can't remember who pulled out the barrel on Friday night, but it ended up in a Charlie hanger who failed to capitalize on, you know, the momentum of Kadeen Coleman running by looking for a handball and then outnumbers in the forward 50. But that was a nice little moment as well.
Yep. Big O with the old 70-meter Tory. It's good. I thought he's a bit unlucky because the goal he kicked was like way more hectic because of the camera angles than it probably was, because like we know that O's going to kick that goal. Like he's super coordinated for a gigantor. And it was just like, oh yeah, he's got the ball and the little check side from the pocket. Like, but yeah. I felt bad that he just like couldn't hold on to the raging bull, or the system went horrid. Like he didn't exactly do great on the hitouts, but like, you know, hitouts hit out to advantage. Who cares? We were winning clearance for a lot of that time. So annoyed because I like Big O. He's a good little fella.
It's probably the first time he's ever been called that.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a little fella with a big heart.
And some gargantuan arms.
Just to rub salt in the wound, Sandy Roberts, the whole night, called me Big Jeff Brown. Jeff, did he? Oh, no.
Have you got a nostalgic player for us this week?
Nah, I mean, I do, but have we got any players that played for us in Geelong?
Yeah, we had a couple. I mean, Alan Christensen along the way. Who was that ruckman we had? Trent West. Remember Trent West?
Trent. Of course I don't.
And we got him in the package deal with Jared Jansen, who I think may have played one game for us.
Nostalgic player this week, John Barnes. Oh. When he played for the original hybrid ruckman. No, the one I picked was Magic Michael McLean.
Michael McLean.
So when I was up in Brisbane last week, I found a bunch of the old, like, 1997, 1998, 1999, like, sort of, they were like autograph books that the club used to give out to members.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I thought Magic McLean was, like, pretty old. But he looked younger than, like, Chris Johnson and Daryl White. But he's, like, 10 years older. The evergreen man himself.
Considering now, I can see him here in a Footscray jumper with the VFL logo still on it, tells me that, yes, he probably was a wee bit old.
So, funnily enough, he only played one game for the Lions.
Really?
Yeah, but he played from 91 to 96 for the Bears.
Yeah.
So, he was just sort of like a kind of crazy dude that used to run around, like pretty, I don't know what he did, but... And looking through those things, I was like, I remember that guy. And he looks young, but he wasn't. He was quite old. Yeah, Michael Magic McLean. So I think he kind of was quite pivotal for some of the Indigenous players that kind of came through. Daryl White, Chris Johnson, obviously, when he came through after the merge. We also had Danny Dickfoss running around as well, who was pretty cool. Danny. But yeah, he was in the Indigenous All-Stars.
Nice.
So that's neat. Oh, no, he was coaching them. Coached them. Yeah, fair enough. And he won 2 Brisbane Bears BNFs.
What a guy.
So, I don't know. I was really, really, really not feeling particularly nostalgic. So I wanted to get kind of as far from 2023 as possible. So the logical conclusion to that was someone that played one game in 1997 and then the rest of them for the Bears.
Sure, that does go back away.
I don't care if anyone has a problem with that because I don't. I don't want to think about football until, like, what is it, 4:42 or something next Saturday, so...
That's understandable. It's going to be hard to watch 360 or listen to SEN or any of that stuff this week because you know that bloody Melksham's goal near the siren is going to make a few highlight packages. So, nevertheless, I will put myself through the suffering and we'll be back here next week, hopefully with some much better news.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!